Oh,
Lions Collective, every single Wednesday at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunchtime Sports. Joined alongside me, three other individuals, Justin Rogers, Detroit Football Network, Colton Pouncey from The Athletic, and Will Birchfield from 97.1 The Ticket. We got another week of Lions news, things that are happening. Last time we were live, we were talking Drew Petzing, and now we get to talk about another addition today to the offensive staff. And, you know, some other things that maybe foreshadowing with the Detroit Lions. But how are we feeling today, fellas?
Good. Little cold, but getting over it.
Just a little cold. It's pond hockey season, baby. This is what it's all about in the D.
I'm feeling great. I love my off seasons, as people know. So no, I'm having a great time.
Where are you broadcasting from, Colton?
The bedroom. Yeah. I would give a tour, but there's not much to show.
Okay.
All right. little office desk setup, you know. Have bedroom. So
there you go. Well, last time we were live, we were talking Drew Petzing, and you know, I told you guys why at first I, you know, was crashing out. We had a great conversation. We are now a week removed, and you guys, you know, including myself, everyone got to kind of dive into Drew Petzing and dive into more things as it pertains to the Cardinals of last year and his time with the Cardinals. Brad Holmes, actually, shout out to Dave Burkett. Brad Holmes spoke about the addition there, and you know, he made some great points. But where are you guys at? Just a week removed. I know we all said a lot of positive things about the guy, but diving more into the film and the analysis, where are you guys at with Drew Petzing now?
Where are you at, Jeff? Have you recovered yet? I feel like last week was your purging session. Hi, I'm Jeff, and I crashed out about Drew Petzing. Hi, Jeff.
Yeah.
How you doing, brother?
Felt like intervention, you know, like all you guys surrounded me, and I was like, wait, what's going on? And we're like, Jeff, we're going to talk to you about the Drew Petzing stuff. And you know what? After that, I think talking to you guys obviously helped. You know, talking more about it helped. Doing more research helped. You know, I think the fit makes a ton of sense. Okay. And honestly, I'd be lying if I didn't say that adding Mike Kafka made me even happier, because now you have basically two qualified offensive coordinators for the price of one. But I feel better than I did, you know, reading Twitter with the first reaction. I feel a lot better.
Jeff found a chalkboard and wrote, "I will not crash out about 50 times in the last week." So he's good.
My pros outweigh my cons.
Yeah. Hey,
had me dying last week.
And it sounds like they got two for the price of one, according to Jeff. So this is a great move. Sheila's got to be fired up about this.
Yeah. There you go.
I think the last time we, you know, talked, we just had a lot of numbers to work off of, some that were compelling, some that were concerning. But I think even the great EPA only tells you so much. You know, you need to kind of see it with your own eyes and to really get a feel for it. And so I will admit I've spent way, way, way too much time watching Cardinals film the last week. I would probably say I put in about in the ballpark of 30 or 40 hours just kind of watching the games, taking notes.
Jesus, you're a sicko.
Hey, not all here in the Capes.
This is my brand, fellas. Like, I
go outside.
I guess.
Yeah. Fine. Fair enough.
Yeah. I just need to get away from the kids for a little bit with all the school cancelings they've had. But look, I wanted to understand, you know, the higher on a little bit deeper of a level. And so, you know, I've been breaking it down on my site, the Detroit Football Network, the run game, the pass game concepts. I've got a red zone post running later this week. But, you know, I wanted to watch each of these snaps, watch how he utilized the personnel, watch how he ran up his schemes. And even more so than the way I think I kind of felt initially when I saw the logic of the fit on paper, you know, seeing the film, I feel like I understand it more. And you know, it's still not going to calm down, you know, those that have made their rash decisions and reactionary decisions, and you know, they're going to need to see it in action come September before they're, you know, able to be talked off of their ledge. And you know, if it doesn't work, they'll be right. But I like the power running component of his game. I like the tight end usage. I like the versatility. I think there is some quiet creativity in what he does in both the run game and usage of his best pieces. And I still look at it and say, yeah, they had some decent pieces in Arizona, but it doesn't really compare to what he's inheriting in Detroit. He did not have a great slot receiver to pair with a great tight end. And so, you know, adding, it's basically like if you plugged in Amon-Ra to that Cardinals offense, how different would it look? And so I think that, you know, more than ever, I really kind of see the excitement of what Dan Campbell did in making this hire.
Yeah, I didn't lock myself in a closet like Justin did over the last few days, but I did watch a little bit myself, and I would agree with a lot of that. I think when you're watching Cardinals tape, you know, God forbid anyone has to do that, but if you are watching Cardinals film, I think you see a lot of things that can work for the Lions that just didn't work in Arizona, whether it was the quarterback. You know, there's sometimes there were things that were schemed up perfectly where you have a receiver kind of running off a safety, creates opportunities over the middle, whether that's for Trey McBride kind of short near the line of scrimmage or, you know, Wilson kind of running over the middle. There are plays where like Jacoby would check it down or Kyler would scramble where, you know, if that's Jared Goff in that situation, he's ripping that over the middle. It's going to be a gain of 25, 30. So I saw a lot of that. I like some stuff they did with McBride in terms of tight end screens. And I think that was something that Ben did a good job of taking care of Sam Laporta, getting him involved in that. Kind of went away from that a little bit last year. The run game, as Justin mentioned, the power run schemes, the gap stuff. I really think like that's some of the stuff that the Lions already do. But if Petsing is able to teach that better along with Hank, and I think that relationship, having, you know, coached together in Minnesota in the past, like if I think it kind of, you know, limits the catch up process because they've worked together. So if they're able to teach that maybe cleaner and work together on, you know, getting the young guys up to speed quicker in some of those concepts, I think they'll be just fine there. Obviously, they still need to upgrade the talent in that room, but I think that's where Petsing can come in, especially in the run game, things that he can do with those gap concepts. And that's where a guy like David Montgomery, I think, can really benefit from some of the things that he wants to bring here, I'm assuming. So, yeah, I mean, things like putting the safety in conflict and creating matchups and some of the creativity, like you see that in their tape, even though the personnel probably wasn't a perfect fit for what he wants to do. So, yeah, I mean, I'm optimistic that can work here, but you got to see it play out, obviously.
Breaking news. Colton just put David Montgomery back on the roster.
Yeah. He's still on it, as far as I'm concerned.
Under contract.
Yeah, sure. Sounds like Brad Holmes talking about Swift post 2023 draft. Yeah. He's still on our team for now. Yeah. I like that. The Petsing hire, in a way, sort of passes the buck to Brad Holmes to live up to his word of urgently addressing the offensive line. And no matter who the Lions hired at OC, obviously that was going to be an emphasis this offseason. But it feels like, especially with this hire and this run scheme that Petsing purportedly wants to install, that the need for proven talent added at offensive line is maybe even higher now. And I think the way that Yelda Froholt was kind of the linchpin of the offensive line for the Cardinals epitomizes that. Like, their best offensive lineman was probably their center when their run game was really humming 24, even into 23. And, you know, Paris Johnson's a first round pick. He was on that line. They had some other veteran players, but I think with Campbell hiring Petsing, who's going to bring this gap scheme, this power run game to Detroit, Brad Holmes really does have to, as he said, urgently upgrade the offensive line. And to me, it has to start inside out with adding a center like Froholt, who can handle all the demands that Petsing's scheme will place on those guys up front. So I think that's a healthy move in a lot of ways for this roster.
I feel like I have a lot better grasp on how the pass game is going to be implemented. Just kind of seeing some overlap with the personnel. They run a lot of choice routes in the slot. That's going to fit Amon-Ra really, really well. It's stuff he does already. A lot of hitches on the outside or deep curls, which obviously J-Mo was kind of finding a groove in those. There's enough of those kind of deep shot fades that I think we'll see a little bit more from Tesla, and then a pretty heavy emphasis on a quick passing game that gets guys in space, which is, you know, I think the Lions' bread and butter offensively. Maybe the one thing they didn't do a ton was use their backs out of the backfield. I think that's an area that he's going to be able to explore a little bit more with what we've seen from Jahmyr Gibbs. What I don't feel confident in saying is is what that run game will look at. Obviously, the power game was really important to him in Arizona. It was important with Nick Chubb in Cleveland. He was there. Obviously, it was really important with Adrian Peterson when he was in Minnesota. But he also had some overlap with Dalvin Cook, who was a big-time zone runner. He had exposure to Clint Kubiak. And we hear this all the time that he's going to build a system on what guys do best. And what we've seen the Lions backs do best is zone. And that's, even though David Montgomery looks like a gap running back, he's got a 2-to-1 zone run ratio for his entire career. And I think they pushed more into zone as Gibbs kind of revealed what they do best from an offensive standpoint these last two seasons and really kind of hit their stride in the backfield. So I'm curious where that's going to go. And I think a lot of it hinges on what they do with personnel on the offensive line. I think we're going to get a lot revealed to us there in March and April with free agency and the draft, the guys they bring in at center, whether they need to address the left tackle. You know, are they going to focus on guys that have more of a reputation of succeeding in zone blocking schemes or gap blocking schemes? In reality, you got to do both in the NFL. Like, you can't be a singular team anymore. But, you know, is that 2-to-1 ratio going to go in favor of gap? Is it going to go in favor of zone? Is it going to be more even split? And I don't know if we can say the running backs say zone, but I think ultimately your line kind of determines what you are.
Yeah, we saw the Rams make that switch from zone to gap in recent years, and like, they kind of did it pretty quickly. So I'm not sure if that's something the Lions are looking at as sort of this drastic shift. Probably not, because I think they like the piece that they have in place. You might need to, a lot of it depends who retires, and, you know, we'll get those answers soon. But yeah, I mean, I think you're right, Justin. A lot of it's probably going to depend on what they do with that offensive line. And that's something that we've talked about really since, I don't know, mid-season. Just like, you got to fix that offensive line. And now that you have some new voices on staff, what do they like to do? What do they want to do here? I think that's going to be the big question. And we'll have those answers come free agency in the draft.
Yeah, I think you make the Rams comparison. The other asset that they had this year was they had a two-headed backfield. And I know it took Blake Corum some time to develop, but that went from really a Kyren Williams-led rushing attack to a Kyren Williams and Blake Corum sort of behemoth. And, you know, I wonder if the Lions look at that and are reminded of the potential they have in Montgomery and Gibbs. And I'm sure that when Petsing looks at this roster and assesses the opportunities here, like, he wants Montgomery to be part of this. He knows exactly what he could mean to the run game and how he could combine with Jahmyr Gibbs. So I would love to know Montgomery's thought process right now as he watches this hire, as he assesses the moves the Lions make this offseason. It feels like in some ways he's in a bit of a position of power here as he kind of takes stock of what the roster looks like and how it can or can't maximize his abilities next year. So that's, you know, kind of one of the fascinating subplots of this offseason. It does feel like the hire of Petsing is maybe step one toward convincing Demo to stick around.
And I think one thing we're not hitting on here, Colton, you bring up the switch and scheme for the Rams that, you know, obviously tied in with their switch and kind of personnel. You know, they went away from the 11 stuff and their use of 13 personnel, the three tight ends, became, you know, a major story this season. Obviously, Petsing's kind of been on the forefront of that change, a ton of two tight end, three tight end looks. And so, you know, that brings me back to the point of, what does the personnel changes look like for the Lions this offseason? I think it's still going to be centered around Laporta and Brock Wright, but, you know, who is that third tight end? You know, they took the swing with Kenny Yeboah last year, obviously didn't work out with an injury in training camp, but, you know, are they going to get kind of a formidable blocker? And then that position's room coach is still open. Tyler Roll, yep, took the OC job at Iowa State. Great promotion opportunity for him. As far as we know, it hasn't been filled. The one name I think maybe we're all watching kind of is whether Petsing brings along his Arizona cohort with him in Ben Steele, who was running it there, that can maybe help streamline the process. But I think it's going to quietly be a really important addition, even if it's a guy that only plays 200, 250 snaps next season. That third tight end could really, dictate some of the stuff that they do offensively.
I really think Dan watched back the Rams game and the Steelers, since those are back to back, and saw all that personnel usage in 13 and said, we got to get some of that here. Now, don't know if they'll be using it as high of a rate as, you know, the Cardinals and the Steelers and the Rams did last year. But if you can bring in another guy just as like a change of pace tight end, I mean, you can see how valuable it is. And it's just another thing to have in your toolbox, so to speak. And they have everything else, but if you can find another guy like that that can be flexible and can block and do a little bit of everything, I guess, which is easier said than done, that could probably help streamline this sort of change if that's where Petsy wants to go with the offense.
You think he watched the two games where the opponent ran the ball down their throats?
Yeah.
Respectfully.
Yeah, he watched it back and was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got freaking Darnell Washington out there. Free.
I love this Darnell Washington, man.
I think we all do. It's we're all on the same page.
I did a mock draft that year, and we have a athletic wide mock draft, so every person gets a team. And I think I traded back into the first round, and that's when they had two firsts already. So I had three firsts, traded back into the end of the first round just to get Darnell Washington.
That's a haul. Third round,
but whatever.
Yeah. That proves you love him more than us, for sure.
Yeah. Exactly.
No doubt. Yeah, it seems to be a perfect pairing here. I mean, you have Drew Petsing, who, you know, many, you know, give him praise for what he can do from a schematic standpoint in the run game. And then you get Mike Kafka, who's, you know, he was a passing game coordinator with the Chiefs during the, you know, when the Chiefs were making a run with Mahomes, when he was winning MVP, you know, becomes the offensive coordinator with the Giants, kind of had a John Mort moment where he had his OC duties taken away and then given back to him. And then he was the head coach and the Giants are interim head coach and the Giants were competitive. Obviously, Dan Campbell got to see straight up in first person some of that trickery with Jameis Winston catching a touchdown on Derek Barnes. Shout out Derek Barnes, but he got to see him up close. It was basically like a job interview from a coaching standpoint, and they were able to bring him in. He interviewed for a lot of OC jobs. He's interviewed for a lot of head coaching jobs, and he's a very bright mind, but he seems to be more on, even though he can do a lot of things in the run game, to be honest with you as well. Got a lot of his pass with the passing game. So Dan finds a way to pair both these guys, and it was reported he's going to be in a high-ranking offensive role, which I'd like to get your guys' more thoughts on just a projection on what you think that'll look like. Because someone in the chat asked, you know, what's David Shaw's role going to be potentially if there is a change? But what do you guys think of Dan being able to kind of pull that off and bring in a guy like Mike Kafka? I mean, many people just want one good OC, and you got two guys that could be – I mean, that were OCs a year ago.
Yeah, what a coup. I think that's maybe the simplest way to put it. And we talked about brain drain, you know, kind of with the coaching staff last year, how many guys they got poached, but not only that, but how many smart guys they got poached from the staff. Now you go out and you get, shout out Middlebury.
Yeah, baby.
Middlebury College. You get Northwestern educated assistant in Kafka. And so you're getting that brain power back into the coaching staff. And you know, I didn't watch all of St. Brown's podcast last week or this week, but you know, one thing I noted was when Goff was selling Petsing to St. Brown, one of the first words he used was smart. And mm-hmm. you know, we talked about that a while back. Goff needs to be kind of intellectually challenged and pushed, and I think he sees that in Petsing. I'm sure he'll see it in Kafka. I don't know what kind of experience you guys had kind of digging into what role Kafka would have. I ran into a lot of roadblocks, which led me to believe that they have not formally decided what that role is. I texted one person asking what the role would be, and all I got back was, yes, Kafka is being hired. And it's like, well, that's not what I asked. And I, you know, but look, there's a few obvious possibilities here. There's the run game coordinator and pass game coordinator, which are currently held by Hank Fraley and David Shaw. You know, David Shaw could be on the way out. We don't know, but we know that he was kind of tied to the hip with John Morton. Haven't heard anything on that front, but, you know, certainly a possibility. Also assistant head coach. And that's a role that Scotty Montgomery has had. Huge, huge Scotty Montgomery guy here. I think he's done great work with all the backs and receivers, but we also know he interviewed for the Ravens OC job. You know, I don't know if anything on that front has been decided. The Kafka news came out hours after Montgomery interviewed or the interview was announced. So I doubt there was a decision made on that front at that time. But I think the Lions are kind of evaluating their whole staff, where things are moving. And, you know, they'll slot Kafka into a role kind of once the dust has settled on some of those other decisions.
Yeah, I think the words used were like, a high ranking offensive position or something like that. So like, when I think that, if it's not OC, as we know, which is filled, my mind immediately goes to pass game coordinator. As Hank Fraley's run game coordinator, that's, he's not going anywhere. They love him. David Shaw was a John Morton guy, and those guys talked about being best friends all year. And one of those guys is no longer here. I did wonder if that's where you bring in a guy like this to, you know, probably some shuffling that still needs to be done, but I don't know. That's kind of where my mind went. We'll probably get some more clarity on that in kind of the weeks to come. But I feel like Kafka, given his background as a quarterback's coach, as a former pass game coordinator, like the verbiage that's being put out there as a high ranking offensive assistant, it's either pass game coordinator or assistant head coach and maybe a position title. So unless he's coaching tight ends and maybe gets that assistant head coach if Scotty Montgomery leaves, I feel like it's going to be something like pass game coordinator. So I don't know what that means for David Shaw. Maybe they can find another role for him. But I feel like they just got to let the dust settle first. So I imagine that's why people are being a little coy about this. But, you know, that's just kind of where my mind goes for something like this. But I will say I was shocked, maybe not shocked, but I was surprised when I saw, you know, I got the notification like, oh, former Giants interim head coach Mike Kafka. I got that like little preview on my phone on Twitter. And then I like clicked the whole tweet. I was like, okay, where's it going to go? Scroll down. To mine. So I was like, oh, wow. What?
How?
Where's it going to go? Yeah. That's kind of what my mind went through. And you do the gymnastics, I guess. And so, you know, we'll see where that ultimately ends up. But if it is pass game coordinator for him, I think pairing him with a guy like Petsing, who does so much with the run game, as we talked about, and then you have a guy like Kafka, who can be an ideas guy and has played the position, has overseen pass games before, the creativity that he can bring to the table based on what we saw in that Lions game alone versus the Giants, it feels like that was missing last year. And so just, you know, you can argue too many cooks in the kitchen, but if all the cooks are, you know, kind of learn from the same tree and think the same way, then I really have no issue with it. All these guys seem like flexible, adaptable guys. A guy like Kafka in particular came from, you know, a lot of dysfunction in New York with Brian Daboll towards the end there. And it's like, okay, you're play caller 1 second. Okay, now you're not. Okay, now you're calling plays again. If he can deal with that, I think he'll just be fine in Detroit, where, you know, Dan and Petsing are going to have a lot of say in what things look like here. So I'm not too worried about him fitting in or egos getting involved. The guys that they've hired, it doesn't feel like that's either of them, either their MO. So no, I like the fit. And anytime you can bring in a guy that, you know, you probably would have been perfectly fine with him as OC, but to get him in another role here, I mean, hard not to think of that as a success. Anything other than a success.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know if we can rule out David Shaw's return just yet. I mean, they interviewed him for OC, and so if they thought highly enough of him to interview him for OC, then it's not someone they want to leave the building. And now maybe they do need to change titles and find a role for Kafka that fits that high ranking description. But I still think they like the idea of David Shaw staying around. He worked really closely with Jared on game days this year. He was kind of the conduit between Morton in the booth and Goff on the sideline between drives. And say what you want about the offense, but we can all agree Goff still had a hell of a year. And I think Shaw, maybe unlike Morton, is someone who is on an intellectual level with Jared Goff. I could see his wit and intellect matching that of Kafka and of Petsing. So I think he's a figure worth keeping around the building if he is interested in staying in either a lesser role or a different role. With Kafka, pretty incredible that, you know, you're able to get a guy in a non-OC role who has interviewed for 8 head coaching jobs over the last 3 off seasons.
That's been eight, dude.
22, 23, and 24. He landed 8 head coaching interviews. And I know some might say, well, that means 8 teams passed over him. But when you consider some of the numbers that the Giants offense was putting up, the fact that he was still attracting that much interest speaks to sort of his standing around the NFL. And a guy that was up for numerous OC jobs this offseason too. So the Lions have to feel pleasantly surprised that they were able to hire Petsing and then still add Kafka. And I agree with everything you guys have outlined that he does feel like a natural complement to Petsing as someone who is obviously well-schooled in the passing game. You really have to appreciate the fact now that in this offensive building, you have a descendant of the Peyton tree, a descendant of the Norv Turner tree, and a descendant of the Andy Reid tree. I mean, that's a pretty good place to start when you start designing an offense and putting the playbook into function. But I also wouldn't discount, you know, the effect that Kafka had on that Giants run game this year. And, you know, they were obviously committed to it. And I think they finished second or third in the NFL in rushing attempts. And I think a lot of times, you know, rushing attempts are either inflated by teams playing with the lead and bleeding clock, or suppressed by teams playing from behind and having to pass the ball. So the fact that 4 or 3 win Giants team still ran the ball as often as they did, albeit with a mobile quarterback and Dart, says to me that this is a guy who clearly believes in the run as much as the pass. And one stat that jumped out to me about the Giants offense this year compared to the Lions offense is that the Giants rushed for the 4th most first downs in the NFL this year. The Lions rushed for the 4th most first downs in the NFL last year. They fell to 23rd this year. And I think that's one of the stats, unlike maybe total yards or yards per carry, that captures the decline of the rushing attack this year. They weren't able to run the ball for positive gains on second or third down. And I think that's something the Giants did well. Hopefully Kafka can bring some of that back to this Lions offense.
Could you imagine how many first downs they would have had rushing if Scadaboo didn't get hurt? Number one with a bullet.
Yeah, clearly. I know that's. Yeah, absolutely. And that probably counterbalances the effect that Dart might have had on those numbers.
So a couple of things I noticed in Kafka's profile that maybe contrast a little bit with Petsing, that maybe first of all, let me point out Colton's employer, The Athletic. They do a really, really fantastic job writing up profiles of offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators. It's just like a hole, I think, in journalism. And all the best ones that I found this offseason, this process, were done by The Athletic. Really comprehensive, great quotes, great background. So clearly quality publication. Subscribe if you are not. This Colton guy is pretty good. I don't know if you guys know that. In terms of contrast, deep passing, the Giants did a lot more of it last year than the Cardinals have done, than certainly the Lions have done. So I think that's an area that maybe needs to be opened up a little bit, not just with JMO, but with Tesla as well. It's just an untapped avenue. In terms of ground game, we talked about all the power running. The Giants did quite a bit of power running as well, but also were among the league leaders in inside zone. So you get a little bit more contrast, and then not necessarily a contrast, but you know, quick passing game. We talk about the importance with the Lions. We talk about how much the Cardinals did it. Well, Patrick Mahomes has been doing it forever, and that's where Kafka really kind of bloomed and grew as a coach. And so you're just going to have more creativity, more ideas within the quick passing game that is so important to the Lions already. And then, you know, going back to my point with The Athletic, one of the quotes there about Kafka was his collaborative approach, his willingness to listen to ideas, to implement ideas, obviously to present ideas. That is the foundation of what this coaching staff has been built on, what the front office has built on. And so, you know, I don't see a concern with too many cooks in the kitchen. I think it's going to be a really collaborative process with Dan, with Drew, with Kafka. And I think it's going to be a beautiful thing. One last thing I wanted to present to you guys, David Shaw. Before he came to Detroit and Denver, he was doing a front office role. That was a new avenue for him. Do you think there's any possibility that maybe, you know, Brad sees value in that, and, you know, that is maybe where Shaw moves in the organization if he sticks?
Potentially. I feel like it's more if Shaw wants to do that. It seems like he wants to stick with this coaching thing for a little bit longer. And I think he did interview for the Bucks OC job. Is that correct?
I think the Bears job he interviewed, if I'm not mistaken.
Last year.
I think he interviewed for the Bucks OC job this year, though. Before
Bucks interviewed everyone.
Right. So, like, I mean, 22 interviews. If he still wants to coach, then maybe. But like, he just kind of stays on this route and finds another job somewhere. I'm sure, you know, if the Lions don't keep him, I want to put that out there. I don't know what that's going to look like, but
yeah,
I think he could land another coaching job, obviously, just with his resume. But that'd be kind of interesting if he wants to go that route. I'm sure the Lions would be happy to have him up there.
Yeah, maybe that's a proactive move too. I mean, this is a front office that if it continues to draft the way it has, will inevitably lose some pieces. And, you know, I don't know if he's ultimately primed for something like an assistant GM role, but, you know, Ray Agnew has gotten some looks over the past couple of years here. And maybe that's Brad thinking a couple of years ahead as, you know, as someone who could help them prevent a brain drain in the front office if it comes to that. I also like that the Lions, you know, for the most part, have gone young in their hirings this offseason after a year in which they mostly went older. You know, I think Campbell, not to speak for him, probably felt the need for, you know, some fresher perspective, maybe some more modern ideas, modern thinking. And it feels like, you know, he's certainly going to find that in the guys that he's brought in so far.
With that too, right? Like you're backstopping he talked about, you know, being afraid of losing a coordinator. They didn't have an obvious option when Ben Johnson left. The odds of both those guys getting hired away next offseason is pretty low. Whether it happens 1, 2, 3 years down the road, maybe you have that backstop in house that allows you to kind of have a little bit more fluidity in the next step in that case.
Yeah.
And I'll say, I think Dan did a really good job sort of eliminating blind spots. Like he went out of his way to get guys from different backgrounds, different systems to collaborate with. And I think that's the big word here, because I think all these guys are going to work together. So he was proactive. He was aggressive. There's a sense of urgency. I think he did his job based on what he felt was wrong with his offense. He went out and got two outside voices, which is what we all wanted to see. Now I think more of the pressure goes on Brad in the front office to identify good fits for what they want to do on offense going forward. So I think that'll be the big next step for this offense.
It's a great point, Colton. I think the way I've been describing it is different voices, philosophical overlap, right? Yeah. Like there's still like the fundamental foundational core values of what you're about, how you view the game of football, but just you're not trying to replicate Ben Johnson. Finally, you realize you tried to do that. You tried to keep the wheels in motion with what was working. And you said, okay, that didn't work. We took a step back. We need to kind of refresh the perspectives in the building. And I think that they did a really good job with that.
Yeah.
Hold up.
You got the Lions who brought in basically two OCs that were available, and the Eagles just can't get even a college OC. So shout out Jim Bob Cooter. He could be up for the job, Mr. Jim Bob Cooter over there in Philly. So we'll see. Before we move on, talk about the defense, we'll talk about the NFC, AFC championship games. I got to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, and we'll see you guys in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Our friends over at Sleeper, proud sponsor of Lions Collective. Use that code HMA. Get a $100 deposit up. Match up to $100 and check out Sleeper Picks, the real money product that connects friends over picks. You choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players. You can do it in the Super Bowl. You can do it across different sports. Even when the NFL ends, you just pick more or less than the predicted stats listed. And on Sleeper, you can get up to 1,000x payout. Share with your friends, get rewarded together. You can also check out the fantasy side of Sleeper. You guys know, one of the best fantasy sporting apps out there. Shout out to Sleeper for sponsoring Lions Collective as always. Now let's get back to the show. More to get to talk more about this defense. It seems like the Lions, well, Dan Campbell specifically, has kind of been focusing on the offensive side of the ball. Again, not saying that Calvin Shepard's going to get fired or anything like that, but my curiosity goes to, you know, and I tweeted this out, I love the Mike Kafka hire, but you know, after it was made, I'm like, man, it'd be nice if Calvin had someone like this to lean on, where you kind of brought in a guy who could just be someone that, you know, I know Casey Rogers has been a defensive coordinator in the past, so he's got some of that experience as well. He's a defensive line coach. But it'd be nice if Calvin kind of had someone. He's the coordinator that you could argue needs to develop more than Drew Petzing. Drew Petzing was a 3-year guy over with the Cardinals. So I'm very curious if Dan Campbell has that thought process maybe on his mind, to where they can maybe bring in someone that Calvin can lean on. But just looking at the defensive side of the ball, is there anything or maybe things that you guys wonder to yourselves that Dan Campbell can make some changes? I know Deshae Townsend's been tossed around. I know among fans, like, what's his future look like? What do you guys think happens on the defensive side of the ball, if anything?
First of all, shout out Jim Bob Cooter. What is going on here? It's amazing how many former Lions coaches are in the news right now. Joe Lombardi, Anthony Lynn's getting interviews.
Terrell Austin's name's being kicked around.
Where's Austin?
Jim Schwartz?
I've actually heard that.
Yeah,
Schwartz? Schwartz. I think Austin's interviewing for a DC job.
Washington, I think I heard.
Yeah, I think they just made a hire. Anyway, I think he's still under contract with the Steelers, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, dude, if Jim Bob Cooter ends up in Philly, there will be so many Cooter Eagles jerseys walking around that city next year. That's an automatic.
You know, it's interesting you brought up Terrell Austin's name because, you know, I was thinking about senior defensive assistants. We've kind of had this conversation before, and I'm going to stay away from the name that I think Colton and I agree on. Leave that one for that guy. But I was trying to think of other names outside the box, and Austin kind of came to mind. Yeah. Obviously had the greatest defensive season in recent Detroit history with that 2013 squad. Mm-hmm. Obviously that's 13 years ago, and you know, there's some question marks there with what they're producing in Pittsburgh. But I want to throw a pretty interesting name in the mix here because that senior defensive assistant is usually a guy that's older. It's usually a guy that maybe doesn't have the energy or the stamina to continue being a coordinator. They're there to kind of organize and help with ideas and be a sounding board. And so I was really kind of thinking through names, like who could be available. And one that came to mind was John Chavis. And if you don't know who that is, it was Kelvin Shepard's defensive coordinator at LSU. Mm-hmm. And kind of a big inspiration to kind of how he changed seeing football into kind of this holistic view of the defense. It's the origin and the heart of his why intention with every play, forced Shepard to move out of an every down middle linebacker role and play weak side and play strong side and kind of see the game differently. Chavis was a very good defensive coordinator in college, had some really great defenses at LSU, Texas A&M before he was broomed out with Sumlin there. Most recently was in the UFL with Birmingham, and they were crazy good. I think they had a streak where they almost didn't lose a game for a year, which I think is 7 games in the UFL. But stepped down late in his last season because of a medical scare. Reports from the coach at that time was it's not serious. He's good. He just kind of stepping away to kind of get his health right. I don't know where he's at. He's almost 70 years old. But if you're looking for a guy that can be a sounding board for Shepard, but also won't take shit from Shepard, because that's kind of his nickname is the Chief. Like, you know, I just want to throw something maybe outside the box as maybe a guy that can, you know, help here, that maybe doesn't have the freshest ideas, but can be a guy that helps get the details right in a system.
Justin's trying to aura farm in case he gets that right. I see. Yeah. I see your game. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. We've talked about it. You know, when AG was here and was getting a start, you know, they had Dom Capers and John Fox, I think, in that role too. So, like, you know, AG had some help, and he was, you know, an older coach getting a start as a DC versus Shep, who's a younger guy. And, you know, not have someone in that role. I know they had Jim O'Neill as a defensive assistant, safeties coach. He's been a coordinator before. You know, I know Casey Rogers, obviously, but I did kind of wonder, like, if maybe, I think the name Justin was kind of hinting at earlier was Chuck Pagano. Yeah. And, he was retired before then. I think he was kind of spending most of his time with Pat McAfee, like weekdays. but he came out and was coaching, I think, the secondary for the Ravens this past year.
Yep.
I think Shep even said, when we talked to him for the first time after he got the DC role, was like, man, if I knew Chuck Pagano was ready to come out of retirement, I would have given him a call. Like, I didn't know. So I don't know. That Ravens staff is going through some turnover right now. Obviously, a new head coach and mentor. If Chuck wants to keep coaching and can do it for, you know, one of his pupils and Kelvin Shepard, I think that would make a lot of sense to want to go that route. But, you know, I think Shep did a good job, all things considered. The defense was humming, you know, pretty well the first half of the season. I think from weeks 1 to 8 or 1 to 9, they were, you know, top 10 in a lot of defensive metrics. And obviously things kind of snowballed there when the injuries piled up and I didn't feel like he had the right adjustments. And that's maybe when, you know, you lean on, you know, a veteran voice that's kind of seen and done everything in this league. And he didn't really have that to lean on. So maybe you go out and get that guy for him this year, since, you know, at this point, I don't think they're making any changes to DC pretty late in the cycle, unless you're Aaron Glenn in New York and just firing half your staff in almost February. But I don't really see that happening here. I think Shep's going to get another chance, as he should. So if that's the case, then help him out. You know, he's still a young guy. He's still learning on the job. You like what he brings to the table as a coach, what he did as a linebackers coach. Like, give him extra resources to maximize what he can be as a DC. And whether that's someone to help him on the back end, because we know AG was handling that when he was DC as a former corner. Give him some help if you want to make an adjustment there on the back end. And I think the results will be pretty good.
Yeah, you know, when the Ravens hired Pagano last year, it mirrors the situation the Lions find themselves in this year. Like, Zach Orr had some struggles in his rookie season as a DC and play caller, a former linebackers coach for the Ravens, a former linebacker himself in the NFL, who had been promoted pretty quickly into a high profile DC job for a team with huge expectations. And, you know, they didn't feel like the defense met those expectations. And so John Harbaugh proactively sought out Pagano and brought him in as someone to be a sounding board, to be a guide for Orr. And you can question whether or not it had the desired results. I think the Ravens defense was probably better actually in 24 than 25. Now injuries played a part in that, but I like the fact that Pagano also coached Shep with the Colts back in the day. And so that, you know, that would seem like he would be compelled to come kind of be a mentor for him here in Detroit. It's such a hard role to try and forecast, because you don't know which coaches are even interested in taking on that title. And you look for guys who have been DCs, because that's the experience that you imagine Campbell would be attracted to. And yet you don't know if any of them want to take a step down into sort of an advisory assistant role. A couple names that I'll toss out there, Terrell Austin actually was one of them that came to mind. I wonder if Patrick Graham, who might be on the outs with the Raiders and has interviewed for the Steelers DC job, is someone that Campbell would reach out to. He also, like Pagano, coached Shep once upon a time back in the NFL on the Giants in 2016. And maybe he would be intrigued by kind of making a 1-year stop in Detroit to kind of relaunch his profile into the next hiring cycle in 2027, I guess it would be. And then, I don't know, this one will probably be met with much more resistance given the way things ended for the Jets this year. But Steve Wilks, I mean, he's been a two-time head coach in the NFL. I think he's been a two- or three-time defensive coordinator in the NFL. And I distinctly remember when the Lions got kicked around by the Panthers at the end of the 2022 season, when the Panthers ran for like 7,000 yards against them that day, when Campbell and Wilks met out at midfield, Campbell like applauded Wilks for the ass kicking he gave them. He was like, "That was a hell of an ass kicking. Well done." Ever since then, I felt like Campbell respected this guy so much for the kind of the way he attacks the game. So I don't know, those two names popped into my head. Again, hard to say whether given where they were last season as D coordinators, that they'd be interested in playing a lesser role. But I think the way the Lions have established themselves under Dan Campbell and even Brad Holmes as one of the more respected organizations in football makes this as a 1-year kind of gap year an attractive destination for coaches. Like, you can come here and kind of burnish your resume, shine your profile, and then you know, maybe garner some opportunities next year that might not be available to you this year.
The Dan Campbell School of Rehabilitation.
Yeah, exactly.
I need a brand.
I'm so glad you brought up Wilks, Will. I was afraid to do it.
Yeah. I'll walk the plank first.
It went so badly in New York, and he's had kind of a rough stretch here. The 1 year with the Cardinals, the 1 year with the 49ers, well, go to the Super Bowl,
yeah,
have a top 10 defense, and
see,
man's like, ah, no.
Yeah.
And
former Mizzou DC, by the way.
Ah, I was gonna mention. There it is. Mm-hmm.
I looked it up. Like, why did it go wrong? And Shannon's quote was like, his scheme just doesn't fit what we want to do. And it's like, that's, I don't know, it feels like a polite reasoning for what actually went wrong. But Wilkes did have a top 10 defense in New Mexico. He certainly had a top 10 defense at one time as Carolina's DC before his head coach. You know, if he doesn't have to be DC, maybe there is certainly something there worth exploring. I do find it interesting, you know, for the talk of senior assistants. I think the Lions have had one on offense or defense every year until last year. Obviously started with Dom Capers, had John Fox. Offensively, they had John Morton and then Jim Hostler. Does that sound right?
I don't know. Yeah, well, then they elevated David Corral into that senior defensive assistant role last year by title. Obviously, he had been on staff, but if I'm not mistaken, they elevated him from defensive assistant to senior defensive assistant. But I don't know that he has like the NFL travels that a lot of us are picturing with this role.
And I think maybe that's kind of the point I was getting to is you talk about Casey Rogers, you talk about Jim O'Neill, you talk about David Correa, right? Those are three guys with a ton of experience, but they also are responsible for a position group.
Yeah.
Casey mm-hmm. Rogers has got the defensive line. O'Neill's got the safeties. Correa's got the inside linebackers. So he's got the Jack Campbells, Derek Barnes, Alex Anzalone's of the world. They're busy during the week. And I don't know exactly how, you know, roles are split, but a senior defensive assistant seems like a bigger picture overview where they're not distracted by maybe position group duties throughout the week. And so I think that's where there's value of just having kind of that big picture oversight from somebody that's got a ton of experience.
Yeah. I also think that that retaining Jim O'Neill is a pretty important move for this defense. Obviously AG had expressed some interest in bringing him to New York. And I think it was even more impressive in some ways what O'Neill did this year as safeties coach than what he did in 2024 with a healthy Kirby Joseph and Brian Branch. Not to undermine that, like the way he developed those guys in tandem spoke a lot to his coaching ability. But this year, like he had Thomas Harper, who was a waiver claim after being cut by the Raiders at the end of camp, playing really well for this team for most of the season. And I would argue that he even had Daniel Thomas prepared to play pretty well for them when he was thrust into a bigger role, Maddox, you know, in the final month. Yeah. The season Maddox, the same thing. And he was a guy who was maybe going to play some nickel, ended up having to play some more safety down the stretch. And I thought he performed well, especially in that Cowboys game. And you know, that obviously highlights the job that Jim O'Neill has done here. And he's really, really well liked inside that building. I don't think he's a guy they wanted to walk. If nothing else, very important to note that his son, who I think is like 8 or 9 years old, delivers the third down speech to the defense at the end of each week. I was catching up with Jim O'Neill, just kind of shooting the shit at some point during the season. And he was like, yeah, my son records a little video and hypes the guys up. So without that, where would this defense be moving forward? But I think that Jim O'Neill is a key cog for the back end and someone that is important to keep around.
Junior defensive assistant.
You love it.
Now, for the last 10 minutes, we'll get into our conference championship takeaways. We have our Super Bowl here, Seahawks, Patriots. And, you know, I think every week we've kind of talked a little bit about what we can learn from the playoffs. I know not every week you're going to learn it. Not everything can apply to the Detroit Lions, but you can see playoff teams and see what's kind of working. It is a copycat league. So you see teams mimic a lot of what these teams do that makes, you know, deep playoff runs. But watching the Seahawks, you know, beat the Rams. Rams can't get over the top there, like many predicted. Or the Broncos try and beat the Patriots with a backup quarterback. Sean Payton refusing to take points early before a blizzard came in. You know, kind of costed them. But now that you have your Super Bowl matchup and you got to watch the conference championship over the weekend for both conferences, what are some things that you guys maybe thought to yourself or any takeaways you guys had?
What's the idea of wisdom, like being able to take new information and change your opinions? I don't like admitting what I'm about to admit, but if Jeremy Reisman is watching, then he can do a little victory lap in his house. But my love of snow football was shaken this week. And I love the idea of the weather being part of the game, but man, deciding an AFC championship in an unwatchable game was kind of rough.
Oh, you said shaken. Oh, it's man. Shaken. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Man. I'm a big proponent that the weather is part of it, but like the weather shouldn't be the biggest part of it. And that was a very rough watch on whatever day it was, Sunday. But my biggest takeaway from that, and Jeff kind of hit on it with not taking the field goal, is situational football continues to be kind of the king of deciding close games. Peyton put the Broncos in a really bad spot there by not taking the field goal. I'm normally a go for it guy, but I think knowing the forecast is part of your game planning as a coach. They should have known at least at some level that snow was coming. And I'm going to be not as critical of Sean Payton, but not going for two and taking one late in the third quarter, I think that's more of a coin flip decision, but put them in a position late in the game where they could not kick a field goal to tie it. They had to go for fourth down. Going for fourth down was absolutely the right decision there. I don't know how many people are in the field goal camp with 3 minutes to go, but situationally, those two games were kind of decided by those decisions in a lot of ways.
Get him, Colton. Get him. I mean, snow football, baby.
I hate the snow take, man. Look, in an era where...
I know, I'm so sorry.
20 years from now, we will have all dome stadiums. Like, that's just the reality sterile. Of where the league's going. Like, we are going to be losing recipes, to repeat Michael Irvin. We're losing recipes. And I appreciate... I know it wasn't the most watchable game. I know it ruined the quality on the play, but there's just something about snow football, man. Like, maybe...
Beautiful.
If you want to say the stakes are the stakes and, like, you don't want to have that, sure. But I personally enjoyed watching it. And it was cool, like, from start to finish. Like, the first quarter, like, there's no snow. And then it just progressively comes down harder. Like, that was awesome to watch. So I appreciated that. You don't see that too often.
Can I jump in too, Colton, before you?
Yes, please.
Let's also not act like the snow turned an offensive shootout into a defensive struggle. Like, yes. Bo Nix being hurt and Jared Stidham playing quarterback for the Broncos had a bigger impact on that offensive display than the snow that arrived in the second half. And I think it also had a bigger impact on how the Patriots were playing that game in the snow and calling that game offensively in the second half. Like, Mike Vrabel knew damn well that Jared Stidham in that snow wasn't going to beat his ass. So he wasn't going to commit a turnover. So they were basically just chucking the ball out of bounds or running it for a gain of two and then punting it away. It very well could have played out a whole lot differently if the Broncos had Bo Nix under center, even in those conditions. And then it might have made for the most dramatic, pleasing, fascinating finish as opposed to the one we got. So I'm going to vouch and champion snow football. I think the quarterback play had a bigger impact on that game script than the beauty of Mother Nature.
More importantly, I can't give any credit to Jeremy. Like, I don't want any of Jeremy's takes over my dead body on this show.
Marcus Camby gift.
In reality, it did keep it a one score game when it probably shouldn't have been a one score game. So
yeah. Anyways, go ahead, Colton.
I don't know if I had any takeaways. I mean, like, my takeaway is I love watching the Seattle defense. They're a lot of fun. And like, my coworker, Ted Nguyen at The Athletic, wrote a story recently about just how important the nickel corner is in the modern NFL era for like these great defenses. And I think the Seahawks were second in the NFL in nickel rate this year. And I think the Patriots were sixth. A lot of good, like the Texans play a lot of nickel. The 49ers, know they had injuries, but I think Saleh did a good job. They led the NFL in nickel rate. And I can't help but think about the Lions in that scenario. It's just, I mean, they led the league in 4-3 rate, playing at like 61 or 62% of the time, which is up from 38% in 2024. So in an era where teams are playing nickel at these high levels and like some of the top defenses have like this awesome DB, whether it's Nicky Minwari, like these Brian Branch types that kind of you put them at nickel and you can just let them cook. Obviously, the Lions move Branch to safety, but he still does a lot of stuff in the box. But I don't know. I don't know if that's a tweak we can see where if Anzalone to go somewhere else and you put Derek Barnes back in the box, maybe get rid of the Sam role and prioritize the nickel a little bit more. Maybe that's something that the Lions could do if they're not going to change anyone on the coaching staff, some of the personnel tweaks that they can make. That's maybe one area where I would look and get back to more of that stuff. But I don't know. That's kind of nitpicking. I think Mike McDonald is kind of 1-on-1 in this league, and he knows how to use his pieces pretty well. So I'll give him credit.
Will, does that feel a little bit like an Ennis Rakestraw take? I don't know.
He's got to stay on the field, man. I haven't seen that dude in 2 years.
That's a Mizzou take. I think it's an interesting point because, you know, if Anzalone ends up elsewhere this offseason, they're kind of going to be forced into playing more nickel next year. Like, I don't – unless they go draft a cover linebacker or find one elsewhere in free agency, I don't think that – they would have someone on this roster now who can reliably cover those tight ends or running backs. And so they would probably have no choice but to embrace more nickel. And that, in my opinion, would maybe be for the better, especially if Anzalone isn't here. One thing that kind of stood out to me about watching those games last week is just the value of having a legitimate number one lockdown cornerback. And it was interesting to me that, you know, three of the four teams that played last week could claim to have one of the three or four best corners in the NFL. And the one that didn't, the Rams, sure needed one when that game was on the line. You know, like when the Seahawks got the ball back after the Rams were stopped on fourth down by a Devin Witherspoon breakup in the back of the end zone, the Rams just didn't have any answers. And, you know, it was Cooper Kupp, ironically, who got them twice. And I think once on a hold and then the other one on the, you know, kind of extend to the sticks first down, where the Rams just didn't have any corner who could shut those guys down when they started running man beaters. And obviously Christian Gonzalez seals the game with an interception for the Patriots. And Surtain, I think we would all agree that, you know, he's probably the most talented player on maybe the best or second best defense in the NFL. So, you know, to bring it back to the Lions, you really need the Terrion Arnold that we saw at flashes this year become the Terrion Arnold that you get for 15, 16, 17 games next season. And if not, you need the DJ Reed that you saw in weeks 3 and week 4 to be the DJ Reed you get next year. I don't want to, you know, turn the performance of some of those guys last week into more than it was. Like, certainly those receivers are still going to go off when they go off. But to me, I was just struck that, man, these great defenses all have true lockdown corners who can handle, you know, a side of the field or a single matchup when you need them to.
You know, I thought it was interesting, just given the Lions' emphasis on getting the ground game going is the two teams that won did not have efficient ground games. You know, it was still, this came down to quarterback play. And we talk about defense winning championships. I'm sorry, but quarterbacks still win championships in this league. And Sam Darnold and Matthew Stafford both put on clinics in that game. Darnold made, you know, one more big play. And I guess maybe really the fumble on the punt was the decider in that more than anything. But, if you want to win a championship, you still need great quarterback play in this league.
Well, that'll do it for this week's episode. We'll catch you guys next week. Lions Collective, hit the like button on the stream. Subscribe if you haven't already. Turn on the notification bell so you get alerted when we go live, of course. Until next Wednesday at 6 p.m., we will catch you guys. Peace.